Number 23A.
Well, the Gospel of John, in that third part where we know from the point of view of truth, he shows how Jesus was dealing with sin, sickness, death, and the prince of this world. But when we study it, we don't get really a good explanation of how he did it. Only here and there he gives an indication of his consciousness. So I left that out as explaining it further and tried to show how the textbook gives us a reason and a line of reasoning for dealing with phenomena of evil. So now I want to go a step further and show how John Dolittle taught us, right when I went through class already, and then year after year, always a little bit more exact, the method of treatment, or the order that he used in the method of treatment, so as to give us a method that we could apply. In my little booklet on the development of the Christian Science idea and practice, I have already pinpointed that over a few pages, but I feel that I want to go back to that and enlarge it so that we really begin perhaps to see the reasoning and the logic of reasoning in it. So I take the method that John Dolittle taught us, and I have watched that right from the time of class instruction, and I could already see the main line that he was bringing out. And then year after year, I began to fill in some details which he brought out later on, so as to make an ordered development of the way he was looking at treatment. It came out as a sevenfold way, not that I wanted to have it sevenfold, but when I was constantly over the years pinning down what was the logical reasoning, it just turned out that it was seven. But that is not really the most important thing. What is important is really that we see how to approach really the treatment, the healing of disease. The very first point, and has a touch of mind naturally, is always to go out from the point that we should not go out from the phenomena, but from the divine mind. So the very first thing that we have always to take into consideration is actually that that we are not dealing with the effect of mortal mind, that we are not considering really the disharmonious proposition that sin, sickness and death and all those problems, this disharmony, are always the effect of mortal mind, that they are falsities of the physical senses and the testament of the physical senses. They do not exist in reality. So that I begin to see as the very first thing not to start with the problem. That's the very first point. Not to start with the argument of mortal mind. Mortal mind is a lie, and a lie can never tell us anything that is right. So we don't have to listen to a lie, and never try to get information from that lie. And we know only too well that that lie speaks quite loudly, and without interruption, it constantly brings to our consciousness all the troubles that this mortal mind has to tell us. It constantly talks to us in the way of argumentation, in the way of feeling, in the way of suffering, in the way of paining, of pains, and so on. It's quite a talker, that mortal mind. So if we listen to it, we listen to lies, and there is never a truth in a lie. So a lie can never really give a solution. That's the very first we must see, that we never see go out from the phenomena. Evil is neither person, place, nor thing, Mrs. Eddy says. We have repeated that all over 1,000 times in our life of Christian Science. Yes, evil is neither person, place, or thing. But do we actually believe it, or do we constantly feel, yes, a disease has a person, a disease has a place in the body, and disease is actually a thing and something one can touch, that one can feel, and so one is constantly mesmerized by that very problem. So the great point of departure, therefore, is not to go out from that problem. So what do we do with it? John Dolly used that symbol. He said, put it behind you into a corner. Put it behind you in a corner means don't look at it, don't listen to it, don't have a great discussion and argumentation with that lie. You know that one argues with evil constantly when one is deep down in a problem. Constantly false thoughts come up, false influences come up, false arguments come up, and we answer it. We answer it in the positive or in the negative, but still we talk with the problem. We constantly are discussing the problem with a lie, and that's not good. So he said, put it behind you so that you don't see it, and shut your ears, and don't talk to it, and don't argue with it, and don't listen to it. So turn away, therefore, 180 degree, turn around, and look into the immensity of mind. Look into the infinitude of mind. So the very first point, what is it? I repeat it, not to start with the problem, not to start with the phenomena, but put it behind you and turn away and do the best you can. It's not always easy to go only out from the throne of mind. That only mind, divine mind, is really telling us something, that only the divine mind can tell us the truth about the situation. And from the divine mind, we always see man as God's idea, which does not need to be healed. So we start out right away from that point. Nothing really needs to be healed, except one thing, our ignorance about the situation. That needs to be healed. Our ignorance, again I come to understanding, that is the pivotal point in the healing. The healing takes place within our consciousness, therefore within our understanding, and so that we can see that we don't have to try to improve a situation by thoughts tending spiritually upward. That is the condemnation of mortals to till the ground. This is not the real method. The real method is to drop the whole thing and turn to the divine mind, to the mind of Christ, so that we look out from mind, and from mind we already see everything as idea. Nothing to be healed, nothing to be improved. It's true that that is not always easy humanly, because sometimes mortal mind, the serpent, is a good talker and talks continually, and you know very well that it takes sometimes quite a stand to say to mortal mind, shut up, you are a liar, shut up, and turn to the divine mind. I know it from my own experience that if something troubles me in my work, usually, not bodily, very seldom, if something troubles me, it is as if mortal mind could talk without cessation. And though one says, shut up, and I turn to the divine mind and say, God, I go out from that life, truth, and love which constantly says, let there be mind, let there be divine mind, after 20 seconds the devil talks again to me. We know that. We know that. It's a practice. But and it's something I'm quite sure that you experience too, because it's a universal belief. Okay, so finally we make the grade and stay with that divine mind and are no more listening to the divine mind. We make the grade where we begin to be at rest within ourselves and see that actually only the divine mind is ever going on, and only that divine mind can give us the true information, that only the divine mind is that intelligence which can analyze, uncover, and annihilate mortal mind's argument. So I get the rest and the peace and see that actually no other mind has ever gone on but that divine mind. that mortal mind has never had a starting point, that it has never had a speech, that it ever could speak, that mortal mind could never find a channel to express itself, that it has no power to express itself, that therefore it never has been a cause, therefore I don't have to know really what mortal mind is talking and says, what is the cause? It's never a cause. The only cause there is the divine mind. So I've turned really to the right side and start out from God, point one. Point two, if I go out really from the divine mind, then what do I have to do? I have to see that really mind knows a situation only as idea, doesn't know the situation as a mortal mind situation, and so I have to fill my consciousness with mind's own idea. The admission to oneself that man is God's own idea sets man free to master the infinite idea. So I begin to fill my thought with mind and mind's idea, with spirit and spirit's idea, and see that is the true man, and that true man is always whole. It does not need to be healed. He's always whole and healthy. So that the only thing that I know from that standpoint is soul and soul's idea. Only the spiritual sense of the situation, which is always positive, which is always good. And so I see the whole situation through the lenses of the spiritual senses, of the sense of soul, and not through the physical senses. And little by little I build up really the true idea man. That is the only thing that I have to do. I don't have to heal him. Man is always whole. He's unable to sin, to be sick, or to die. Man is always the idea of God. So as the idea of principle, I begin to fill my thought and see that from principle standpoint, that divine mind only knows really the harmony of being, the harmony of man, only the system of the idea man, only that man is wholly symmetrical, that he is never out of balance, that he is never in a state of disharmony or inharmony, that is constantly the idea of the divine principle operating as the power of God, a spiritual power is a state of spiritual power, is a state of dominion in that spiritual power. And so I begin to realize that he is always governed by that principle, is never governed by anything else, that he is self-governed because he's governed by God, he's self-governed. And so I feel no other system is operating in that man but the divine system. Only the divine system has operative power, so that no other system, no medical system, no hygienic system, no psychic system is operating in man. He's absolutely free. He's free-born as the operation of the divine principle in system and harmony. Isn't that beautiful? So I build up my consciousness further through life and see from the point of view of mind, mind only see life and life's idea. Therefore, I only see a man as never being born, never dying, as man that is as eternal as life itself, man that has pre-existed Abraham, that is going to exist forever. I shall be with you all the time. Is a life that man, that is idea, never comes and goes. He's always, no matter what happened to him materially, he's still the idea of life. He still is enjoying life. He still sees the abundance of life. He still is enjoying the elevation of life, the spontaneity of life. And so I can see that idea man has from eternity to eternity been the full sense of life as idea. Or we go to principle, and I begin to see that that mind, which alone knows man, which alone knows the idea man, that that truth knows man, that man knows the truth, that he is aware of the truth. He is the consciousness of truth, and therefore is conscious of his wholeness. He's conscious that he is whole and hale. He knows that he has dominion over everything, that he's never the slave of anything, that he's never the slave of drugs, that he's never the slave of alcohol or anything like that. He's never the slave of the circumstances. He's always that man of dominion that has dominion over every circumstance. So I see man from the point of view of truth. Or I go on to love and see mind knows man as idea, namely as idea of love. Mind, the divine mind, knows man as the idea of love. And not the human mind knows man as the idea of love. The divine mind knows it. And therefore, the divine mind has been forever. It's the all in all. And therefore, since time immemorial, mind knew man in its fullness, in its beauty, in its grandeur, in its magnitude. That man really is in its in its state of expressing really the Christ manhood, the full Christ manhood, and therefore has never been thinking anything else but only knowing itself as a complete and fulfilled idea, constantly in that magnanimous sense of having the superabundance of being expressed in himself. And so I establish, therefore, what mind, divine mind, knows about man, not like what mortal mind talks about the sick man. This is again seeing that we have to accept to ourselves that man is God's own idea and that that will master the infinite. So that I begin to see that the idea man reflects really the fullness of God, and that mind knows that fullness of God, and therefore man knows that fullness of God, so that he is not unconscious of the fullness of God. Yes, then we can see, once I have established that that true picture of man, that true image in mind as man, the idea of God, then I can go a step further. I can go to soul. Namely, soul is always that which exchanges really the physical sense testimony for the ideas of soul. So at that point, I see that as I entertain, this is a very delicate point, when one goes through mind and spirit and entertains that standpoint, then slowly, the soul sense within us takes over. Then, so to say, remaining or staying within that sense of mind and spirit naturally brings up the soul sense that makes everything definite. And so one experiences suddenly that as we go through these seven synonymous terms and sees man as idea, that slowly something begins to identify itself specifically. That suddenly something stands out or sticks out in our consciousness and begins to talk spiritually to us. And that is the point, really, of soul, where it begins to identify the specific truth about the situation. This is not something one cannot force. It's something that happens, that is dependent on how peaceful our consciousness is, how much we are at peace with mind and spirit, and only as we are at peace with mind and spirit, really, then the waves flatten down and the sea is showing forth a reflection and is able to reflect, really, that specific idea that is necessary for the case. This is something that comes, that is something one cannot learn, that cannot be thought out. That's something that happens in the quietude, in the peacefulness of one's contemplation of the spiritual idea. So this is coming to us. And then there we have to be careful what we do with it. When suddenly we feel a spiritual idea is beginning to talk to us, that soul sense begins to talk to us, that soul sense suddenly says, look here, here is a point. That soul sense begins to define itself as the specific truth about the situation. So we begin to listen to this idea more and more. And as we do that, see that it does not need to happen in one treatment, just in 5 minutes or so. That may take time, that may take devotion, that may take consecration, that may take the purity of our consciousness, but we can be sure, because mind and spirit always are also soul, that they begin to identify them specifically. And so they come to us, and suddenly something stands out in our consciousness, or something happens in our life, or something by the way the atmosphere of something in which we live, or something that happened, as we call, by chance. Something suddenly happens that we suddenly feel, oh gosh, this is the answer, or that perhaps at the moment it only comes, that can be the answer, that might be the answer, and I might not be yet quite definite about it, and so I just get again at peace within myself and ponder it again and love that idea again, and then it begins usually to move, to become definite, to gather really identity. It begins to crystallize within ourselves, and by crystallizing I mean it becomes clearer and clearer as a crystal, and so that I have a feeling now I have found really the true fact about the situation. So this would be the uncovering really of the true individuality as God knows it. So then I know this is not a question of me having found out, of me guessing something, or using what very often is the case, using really psychology or guesswork and say, well, or organ language, as you know, like they do in psychosomatic medicine, and listen to the organ language. All that is not a spiritual science, that is psychological science, and we shouldn't trust that too much. So that we should really only trust really the soul sense talking to us, and it can talk to us in many different ways. So this is what we would call divine mind reading. Namely, how did we define it, or did Mrs. Eddy define it, as the illumination of spiritual understanding. That's divine mind reading. When really the divine mind tells us the exact idea, the specific idea of a case. So we can see that we don't treat really man, that man does need to be treated. What we do is to be transparent, really, for a true idea about the specific case. So if we take heed of that and are not too superficial about it and sweep it away, but really take it as God talking to us, then we come to a further point, to a fourth point, where we see, all right, now we'll have to take this specific idea serious. You remember how Mrs. Eddy, when she speaks about divine mind reading, really shows that that transitionary point from point 3 to point 4 to which we come. She says, you will reach the perfect science of healing when you are able to read the human mind after this manner and discern the error you would destroy. So this is a step further. You see, now we come to the fourth step. In the third step, so to say, we have witnessed that the idea, the true idea, begins to speak to us, that it takes form, that it can come slowly, gently. Sometimes it comes as a burst of light, as a impact right from above, so to say. Sometimes it comes through association of thought. You experience something, you hear somebody saying something, you listen perhaps on the TV, and suddenly it makes a transference of thought, the atmosphere of thought says, oh God, that has to do with this and this too. And something flares up in our mind that is specific. When that flares up, then we come to the fourth point where we have to handle that situation. So principle is always that which begins to handle the situation with power, with spiritual power. So how do we arrive at that? Well, actually to us came the spiritual specific idea, but by the law of opposites, we know now what is the opposite claim. And so we can ourselves come to the conclusion that the opposite of that spiritual idea is really the specific error that needs to be handled. So first in soul comes the specific truth that glares up in our consciousness, that illumines our consciousness. Then we say, well, this is not enough. We have now to handle the claim of the opposite. And so we can see that through the law of opposite, we arrive now at the specific error, which, to make it clear, to repeat it in another way, it is not the divine principle that uncovers the specific error, because principle doesn't know anything about error. Okay? Is that clear? We heard it a few times, that the divine mind only knows its own idea, and therefore only knows a specific idea. It is our understanding of that idea, the understanding in which we make the conclusions or draw the conclusion that a specific truth has always its counterfeit in a specific idea. Just remember what Mrs. Eddy says in Miscellaneous Writing, where she explains that every idea has its counterfeit in some way in the material universe, that everything in the human consciousness finds a counterfeit of a true idea. And that counterfeit is really then that which has to be destroyed. But principle only knows its own idea. We, knowing what the counterfeit of an idea is, can, by the law of opposite, detect the specific error. Is that clear?